Welcome, listeners. The time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream there also. You can also listen to it on ourradionetwork.com. That's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. That's in the Black Belt. Or you can download TuneIn. To any of your handheld devices, TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. You'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth or the auxiliary connection in your car. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook and Time for Awakening Media. The homepage is there with chock full of new content, new programs, and podcasts of those new programs being downloaded all the time, along with other content there, interesting content on the page. So check it out. There's a lot of changes happening and going to continue to happen probably for the next month or so until some of the new programming is coming on board, get acclimated. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in the address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, scheduled to have a special guest join us, author and psychologist Dr. Jerome Fox. The discussion will center around the new book, Addicted to White, The Oppressed in League with the Oppressor. It ought to be an interesting conversation with Dr. Fox, and we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and before we get started with the program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine today. I got rested, and I'm looking forward to this discussion around Dr. Fox's book, Addicted to White.
Yeah, well, before we get started, I think we dodged a little bullet last night, Richard. That snow was coming down, and it was kind of stacking up pretty good, but I think the rain took it away. I woke up this morning, nothing's out there.
Yeah, but as we said the other day, it's just crazy because it's supposed to go into 70 by Tuesday?
I know it. Wow.
And for us conspiratorial, I don't know, for us conspiratorial people, and I guess I put myself in that camp. Every time I see these here planes flying and you see this trail, the information that goes around on the internet about chemtrail. I never know whether the plane is just pushing out exhaust, or are they feeding the sky to deal with the supposedly weather that the weatherman been telling us. But that aside, it might show how my addiction is being demonstrated.
You know, this will be an interesting conversation with Dr. Fox, and I know he's a good friend of yours, and you and him have lively discussions all the time, but it'll be good to kind of translate that to the air here for our listening audience. Because, listen, we talk all the time, Richard, and yourself has been involved in organizations. I've been involved in a few, and a lot of them seem to start out with a fervor, and then sometimes it dies down to almost a trickle. Mm-hmm. And it always leaves, especially sincere people, scratching their head to wonder what is wrong. What is it? But, let's talk with Dr. Fox about this, because it's an interesting premise that he talks about from his years of being a psychologist. Let's dig into a little bit of Addicted to White with Cornell educated, his doctorate from Temple University here in Philadelphia, teaches at the PASSET program here in Philadelphia. Dr. Jerome Fox is with us this evening. Dr. Fox, how are you, sir?
Yes, good evening, and thank you for having me. My voice is a little shaky because I have a cold, but I want to power through anyhow.
No problem. No problem. Dr. Fox,
do you want me? Go ahead.
Well, listen, I want to start it out like this because, you know, I gave that little synopsis of myself, even on my level, and Richard working with organizations, and it goes good for a while, and then something happens and it breaks apart. You state here in one of the forewords of your book, according to your studies, white oppression and its effects on black culture and empowerment suggests that an addiction to five core values, which inherently promote tacit acceptance of white domination, may be at the root of the problem. Let's talk about that, because that's interesting, not only what you state, but how you back it up with facts. Talk about how the addiction to white puts a halt sometimes in some of our empowerment movements.
Right. Well, if I could just back up for a second. First of all, thank you for having me again. And I do want to emphasize that I am teaching a course on this book. This book is the textbook for the course at PASSET, which is at which is on 1509 Cecil B. Moore Avenue, the second floor.
Okay.
We meet every Thursday from 5:30 to 7, and enrollment is still open for my class. So anyone who's interested, please come by. I want to also back up to something you said earlier in your introduction when you asked, what is wrong? And in my book, and perhaps we'll get to this because it is in Chapter 2,
mm-hmm.
I give a list of thoughts for the day. And one of the thoughts is by Zora Neale Hurston. She said, there are years that ask questions and years that answer, unquote. So I added to that, so let the answering years begin now with this fellowship. Now, the question that you, I do want to say that part of our problem is that we are stuck at the first stage of problem solving.
Okay.
In the preface of the book, I mentioned four steps to problem solving. One being describe the problem, two being generate possible solutions, three test one possible solution, and four evaluate the outcome, and if not satisfied, repeat any or all of the previous steps. We are stuck at the step number one, describing the problem. We love to talk about the problem, and we have many different...
It's impossible to deny...
No, go ahead. I'm sorry, Dr. Fox. Go ahead.
Okay. We have many different slants on what the problem is, et cetera, et cetera. But we seem to have difficulty moving beyond just solving us, or describing the problem, to actually solving the problem. We have to ask, why is that? Because obviously I'm attempting to give an answer to what a solution to this problem. And I would say that after a while, I think our oppression or one's oppression can almost eviscerate you to the point where I think at some other point, I don't know if I've I think I did add this to the latest version of the book, that we have three basically ways of responding to our oppression. This is also one of the thoughts for today. There are roughly three sociopolitical postures black people assume when facing white oppression. Most assume the stance of an accommodationist. Some become reformists who, despite their protestations, are still addicted to a white definition of, quote, the good life, leaving only a precious few who boldly and fervently embrace both the thoughts and the behaviors of a true revolutionist, and in the process risking life and limb. That's really it in a nutshell. I don't believe that we are as dissatisfied as we claim to be. And I think our oppressors have been very strategic in developing that state of mind in us. In that, I mean, it's no real sophistication here, but you do have to be strategic. You give enough disgruntled people some little satisfaction. You know, we have our houses, we have our cars, we have our big screen TVs that we spend too much time watching or in front of. And after a while, you know, you find yourself placated. You can't really, and I don't say that to be overly critical of an oppressed group of people, because in truth, it is very hard to continue the fight when your opposition is so great. I know I said, I believe at an earlier point, perhaps in chapter one, that when your oppression has been, over centuries, without letting up, it's very difficult to even imagine what life could be with it, with your own agency deciding, life definitions, what it means to be successful, what it means to be powerful, etc. So that's the situation that we find ourselves in. A lot of times people like to make comparisons between ourselves and, let's say, the Jewish white Jews, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But what they fail to realize is that our oppression has been over centuries, and it was their intent to very specifically target our sense of groupness. So we've kind of lost that. You've lost your culture. You've lost your sense of groupness. Under those circumstances, it's virtually impossible to unite and do those things that require, number one, unity in order to set us permanently free. So that's what we are facing. We're facing the results of long-term oppression that has really worn us down, to put it in more in common parlance, has worn us down. And it's very difficult to motivate people to overcome that kind of inertia, particularly when their basic needs are being satisfied. Once again, we have a house, we have a car, we have this and the other. And those who don't have it, it's also difficult to be concerned in a more, let's say, altruistic way about your fellow brothers and sisters who don't even have those basic essentials, because once again, you've been robbed as a people. You've been robbed of your sense of groupness, of groupthink, in this case, good groupthink. So that's the situation we find ourselves in. And I guess my attempt is to at least put it out there that if you want it, for those, as I say, I think either in, I think I do say this in the preface, for those of us who are really dissatisfied enough, there is a solution to turning this around. But it must begin with recovery from these white value, from our white value dependency. In other words, it must begin with our minds. Now, the overall premise, and you kind of alluded to that, is also obviously in the book, is that we are addicted to an oppressive, really, white value system, which has frustrated our natural quests for life, liberty, and blessedness. Notice I did not say happiness. And a grave obstacle to us to our success and our well-being is our ideological entanglement with this white social order that is predicated on narcissism, greed, and violence. It's interesting because I don't have the paper here, but on, I guess it was Thursday's Metro paper, I had an ad on the cover saying that Trump's motivators praise, money, and hatred, which are kind of related to narcissism, greed, and violence, are your motivators as well. And that's true. The whole world practically has gotten caught up in this Western values disorder.
You know, Dr.
I identify five white values. Mm-hmm. Yes. You want me to stop there?
Yep. Yeah, before you go into, because I want you to identify those and talk about them in depth. But before you deal with that, in chapter two, you kind of talk about solutions basically all through the book. But you talk about forming small groups in black communities where we live, whether it's inner city or rural areas, similar to how somebody would do if they were addicted to drugs or alcohol.
That's right. Similar to the 12-step group that populate most communities in this country, at least.
Yes, and you talk about using them to restore the African self-spirit. Because that was that is what has been severely damaged by us being here. Now, you state here that when African self-spirit is wounded, bound, or estranged, life becomes rudderless, incomprehensible, and dependent. Those things point to our people and what has happened to us. And as you stated, this has been calculated. So before you talk about some of those values, the five core values that we have adopted, talk about that premise of dealing with it from a step or like a 12-step type of solution.
Well, you know, I've said many times before as well that if indeed we are addicted to these five white values that I enumerate in the book, then we have to get serious then and start treating it as an addiction. You know, a lot of people like the title of the book. Oh, yeah, that sounds really great. But we have to go beyond just, you know, a title and take it seriously. And if we do take it seriously, then once again, we have to treat it as an addiction. And what has been one of the more effective interventions for people who are chemically addicted? It has been groups, the self-help groups like AA and you know, NA and all of those other groups. And as a matter of fact, I mean, research proves that the best way for addicts to overcome their addiction is for them to gather together and in groups to help each other. So that's all that I am proposing here. So I'm saying that we need to form our own groups, and I have developed a 3-step process as opposed to a 12-step process in which you know, in the book, I lay out the topics that we should discuss during those meetings, how frequently the meeting should be, and what conditions, et cetera, et cetera. The entire book practically is devoted to detailing that prescription, because once again, it's about solution, not just talking or about the problem or describing the problem. So basically, that's it. I'm saying, given the trying to be empirical, which is the word, by the way, that Trump has tried to ban, interestingly enough. He wants nothing to do with empirical facts. But at any rate, studies have proven, once again, that the best way for people to overcome their addiction is for fellow addicts to gather together and help each other. and I'm asking us to do the same. And I've laid it out. You don't have to, you know, come up with something yourself. I've laid it out from step A to step C, how to do that. Go ahead.
And I see in that chapter, you know, in tying to what Elliot raised, that you say that these groups are many communities. So are you in the development of this process and utilizing the book? And you call it a manual, right? Is it assisting in developing a new form, not a new form, but a form of community self in this recovery process?
Well, yeah, all of it is really involved, or at least I try to. I mean, if people, as the AA people says, it works if you work it. You can't kind of lay back and want to be fed the solution. You really are a part of the solution. And in truth, any organization, if you stop and think about it, Richard, it is a mini community. Be it the NAACP community, rather, be it the NAACP or whatever organization that people are in, those organizations are governed by rules, and the members of those organizations, just like the members of society, are expected to abide by those rules. So, in a sense, every organization is a mini community, and I'm saying that these groups, because they would last, if people do it properly, they would last at least for a year. It would take at least a year for these fellowship members, what I call fellowship members, to get through the three steps. That's a lot of time to be together, meeting, governed by rules, as opposed to, you know, what to say, being on time, et cetera. And all of the rules or the protocol is laid out in the book once again. It becomes a community.
Dr. Fox, I want you to break down what you consider the negative white values that we're addicted to. But
okay,
let me read this line here to lead into you expressing those values.
Okay.
In chapter two, you said, for most Africans, growing up means learning to think and act like white oppressors.
Mm-hmm.
This engenders a deficit-oriented mentality in which self-esteem is equal with how well an African has copied the oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about those core, but because when you read your book and start looking at those values, you can see that even the most conscious of us have adopted some of these values and still affects us.
Right.
So talk about it.
Right. Well, let me say this, that first of all, no black person, either in the diaspora or on continental Africa, has been able to escape the arm and the reach of white values. So to that extent, and most of us have been at some point in our people's history under clear colonialist white domination. Under those circumstances, it's virtually impossible to escape having your mind in some way singed or really just burnt by that level of oppression. So I do want to say that, because a lot of people, when you start talking about being addicted to white, their first impulse is to say, not me, which, by the way, in saying that, they're falling into one of the five values, which happens to be value number five, which I'll get to forthwith. But so let's go to those values. White value number one: everything white is good, and this is really from, I introduced this in chapter one, but everything white is good, superior, or valuable. Everything black is bad, inferior, or worthless. And I say that this imbalanced perspective is strengthened by a subconscious directive to distrust and summarily dismiss any activity or person that dares to challenge it, like the late Khalid Abdul Muhammad, like Samuel Greenlee Jr., the author of The Spook Who Sat by the Door. We're literally being told who to revere and who not to revere by our oppressors. Value number two. It's kind of long-winded, so I'm going to summarize it.
Take your time.
It's basically money above relationships, or money and the things that money buys above relationships. We see that everywhere. And by the way, this entire white value disorder is more than adequately, I mean, par excellence, is being demonstrated by a that, oh, I don't know if I can say this on the air. Okay.
Go ahead.
I'll amend this. By that clown in the White House. Just keep that in mind.
Leave
you want an example.
Leave 45 alone now.
Hmm?
Leave 45 alone.
You're
right.
Go ahead.
Okay, Sambo. the white value number three. White oppressors are trustworthy recorders and interpreters of history and reality. Now, if that were not true, by the way, we didn't deny our addiction to these values. But as I explained in the book, denial is the hallmark of addiction. So don't let someone's denial deter you from, you know, doing, you know, your analysis. And by the way, before I go any further, you said something a moment ago that just reminded me of how I kind of used this book myself. As I, in my travels around the city or whatever, you're constantly hearing black people talk or seeing black people talk. If you're on a bus and I take the bus or walk around, whatever. And in my mind, I'm constantly thinking, okay, that's an instance of value number one, what they're saying. That's an instance of value number two or three. So you, this construct has practical value in helping us understand what's going on around us. Okay, so value number three, once again, white oppressors are trustworthy recorders and interpreters of history and reality. If that were not so, we would be questioning everything we hear on the news and everything we read, particularly in their history books. But we're not. Value number four, individualism is better than collectivism. Hence, obligations to the group are subordinate to personal gain. Now, we know, we just see that everywhere, you know, sellouts to just, you know, the average person, political sellouts, I'm saying, who supposedly represent us, but are really in Congress or wherever they're at for their own financial gain. And some of them have even wound up in prison in this particular state and city. And then value number five, the best way to feel good about yourself is by surpassing, outdoing, and defeating someone else in an activity, achievement, or personal characteristic. This is an extremely difficult value. In fact, all of them really are, but I zero in on this one for us to overcome. Under this value, artificial barriers among people are erected to obscure the breadth and range of interests that all life forms share, leading to incessant, irrational competition and strife. Geopolitically, this value proffers war, hot or cold, it doesn't matter, as the go-to strategy for repairing any breach in national pride. Ecologically, this value transforms a beautifully balanced biosphere into a toxic, chewed-up wasteland. Neither man nor land is allowed to interfere with the pursuit of distinction, exceptionalism, and self-aggrandizement. As a matter of fact, a liberal author once said, I don't have that right here, and I don't want to quote him without, I think that's in another chapter, about basically how every time he sees a friend succeed, this is Gore Vidal, the late Gore Vidal, every time he would see a friend succeed, something inside of him would die. Now, if you just take a pause for a moment and think about how sick that is, and yet white value-dependent Africans suffer from that same sickness, and it is the one value, along with value number four, individualism versus collectivism, that keeps us as a people from uniting. And much of what we have to do in order to secure our freedom permanently requires our unification. Otherwise, we send one person out there and they're martyred. To give a brief example, and I'll stop at this point, I think it was at the University of Missouri, where they were having, the black students were having problems with one of the racist provosts or one of the officials of the university, and they were demanding that he be fired. And, of course, the white university wasn't paying them any mind until all the black athletes got together and refused to play. Now, that collegiate athletic business is just that. It's a multi-billion-dollar business. The minute that all of the black athletes united and refused to play, that white boy was fired. They weren't about to lose that money. And just think, as I say later on in the book, if all professional athletes and collegiate athletes, black athletes, just refused to play until every cop who killed an unarmed black person is at least brought to trial. I'm not saying they have to be convicted because that'll be worked out during the trial, but at least brought to trial. It would decimate that multi-billion dollar sports industry of this country.
Mm-hmm.
But what would keep us, and that's something that no one is holding you back from doing that, except your mind, this individualism, this I got mine. I'm not willing to sacrifice for anything. In chapter two, I give a list of questions to ask prospective, called interview questions on page 27, to ask prospective participants in this into fellowship, as I call it. And the last couple of questions you're to ask if you're the facilitator wanting to start a group in your home.
Dr. Jerome, but before you do that, because I want us to, in that, those questions, I like you to kind of develop that, just like you developed the five core values. But I wanted to kind of re-emphasize something around these values first.
Could I just say this one little thing, though, because it sort of it concludes that bit about our unity and our lack thereof. Well, one of the questions that would be asked is, what are you willing to sacrifice in order to just even participate in the fellowship? Obviously, we're not willing to sacrifice anything in order to be free. But go ahead.
Yeah, and I don't, because it's something I don't want us to assume, and the general audience to assume. But when you were speaking about the first value, mm-hmm. you know, you gave the example of the spook who sat by the door, and what came to me was, I call myself a victim. I could see that myself as a victim of it when we're talking about the film now, right? The Black Panther as a film. And when we look at the film, The Birth of a Nation, that just not too long ago went by. These are two black films, but The Birth of a Nation had the production, the finance, the marketing was done by a black person or black people, right? And compared to The Panther, The Black Panther, but you see the craze of the Black Panther film and compared to the Birth of a Nation film. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that that.
Do you want me to comment on that?
Yes. Would you see that as a reference of the value system playing out?
Oh, absolutely. Practically everything we do, that's why I say it. You can just sit on the bus and just listen to our conversations or read the paper about how we're, you know, acting, and you see, you know, value number one, two, three. It's interesting that you should mention it because there is a movie critic who I think is a racist. I don't know. But as you know, I love movies. I go to all the movies. And I read him because basically he has a very good command of the English language. However, he is completely biased against practically all black films. I feel that he consistently underrates black films. However, for this particular one, Black Panther, he gives almost the full 4 stars, like 3.5. But he begins with the following. With Black Panther tracking to open at $150 million, I think it's already past that, it's virtually certain that star, here again, and just pointing out one person, Chadwick Boseman, the individualism, will generate more money, obsession with money, in this role in 1 weekend than he did playing James Brown, the same actor played James Brown, Jackie Robinson, and Thurgood Marshall combined. And I thought, now, do we need a white person to tell us that this? It happens to be true. And apparently we do. And he goes on to say, is that some kind of weird misallocation of public affection and regard for the icons involved? A triumph of escapism over documented historical achievement. Now, I couldn't agree more with him on this one, even though he's a damn racist. Or at least in my opinion. But at any rate, I just thought it was very interesting that he could point this out, but we're running around here as if the Panther, the Black Panther movie, is the best thing since, you know, Dr. King.
And the point,
or Thurgood Marshall, a role that he played, the same actor played, or another hero, at least some of the time, James Brown, minus his hairdo, and Jackie Robinson, also a hero some of the time. So I thought, now, he has that insight as a white boy, but we don't. They keep their finger on our pulse, on the pulse of the black community.
Oh, most definitely.
They know how to manipulate us.
Yes, I totally agree.
And you've seen how they, and I'm just using The Birth of a Nation, you've seen how they, in order to, the establishment, Nate Parker was accused of something in order to, and black people fed in it, and that was the opening of the rape charge, and in order to say why they shouldn't engage in viewing the film.
Right. But I mean, here again, we are very, when your mind is addicted with these values, you're vulnerable. As I said, and as I think Brother Elliot mentioned, you're vulnerable, and so we need to stop asking why and stop describing it and start doing something about it. I mean, that's always going to be the case. And once again, it took a white boy. He's an actor in one of the movies that are being praised for this coming season, I guess, with the Oscars or whatever, all the awards season. And I can't think of his name, but it took a white boy in the midst of, and I don't want to aggravate any of the women, so let me just say I am squarely in favor of this Me Too movement and what's the other slogan, I forget, time is up, time up, time's up. I think it's a very good development in the socio-political evolution of the world, really. However, this white boy who was one of the actors in the Nat Turner movie said, isn't it curious that, well, he was questioning the selectivity of this Me Too movement, in that it's took him to point out, this other actor, not Ben Affleck, Casey Affleck, who had been at the same time accused of all these assaults or inappropriate behavior with women, that he paid off, did not go to court, in which it was decided that he was innocent, as is the case with Nate Parker. But he settled with all these different women, and yet he winds up winning, I think, the award for best actor that very same year. So now the white boy, just a month or so ago, who was being criticized, had to stand up and say, now isn't this to remind them of how they treated Nate Parker as opposed to their, lily white boy. Just interesting.
And because I wanted, and Elliot, if I can just, be possible, just to raise this point, because I know you've expressed, we recognize that this is a workbook. We recognize that this is a process. Mm-hmm. And we recognize that it is a process to deal with tacking the core instrument in dealing with our liberation, which is our mind. And that you must go through this. And you're saying the foundation that this process is supposed to address is the value system that we carry, and you define those five values. Could you, just for the listening audience and myself, what is, when we say values, what are we talking about? I mean, you laid out what we're looking at, but what are we talking about when we're talking about our values and our core values?
Well, as people who get the book and read it from cover to cover will come to realize that it's hardly a topic that we an issue that we face as an oppressed people that I don't at least touch on in this book. So in the first chapter, I define what values are because I wanted it to be very simple. Sometimes we're so used to talking about we're talking substitutes for acting that we make things more complicated than what they are. I say values are ideas, constructs, or beliefs toward which people have an affective or emotional regard, and to which they are behaviorally committed. So you cannot claim that something is a value of yours unless you have both an emotional regard for that idea, construct, belief, and your behavior reflects that construct, idea, or belief. People want to claim that that there is this dichotomy between what I say and what I do. In our own, in ancient times, in our own homeland, that mean Africa, that was not permitted. There's no distinction between what you say and what you do, and I know that's a really foreign concept to modern day Western world, because they built entire cultures on hypocrisy. But in truth, there was a time where people realized that there is no such thing. So I cannot say I value my people and sell drugs to my people. I cannot say I value my people and are in constant conflict with everybody. I cannot say that I all other black people. I cannot say that I value my people and gossip all the time, destroy lives based on either true accounts or false ones. And I could just go on and on and on. Yet, following the lead of these hypocritical monsters, white monsters, as James Baldwin referred to them as such in I Am Not Your Negro documentary, following the lead of these white monsters, we have allowed a dichotomy to split our what we at least say we believe from what we actually do. Now, the values may be positive or negative. Now, we know this living in particularly under this current political climate. Most of the Trump supporters have very negative values. As a matter of fact, most white people have negative values. But I say, as used throughout my book, the term white values denotes negative values that are disseminated often subtly by white oppressors to arrest the development and prosperity of all persons other than themselves. So values, once again, are ideas, constructs, and beliefs, like I really value my family, for which you have an emotional regard and to which you are behaviorally committed. And that behavioral commitment is really the fillip in this whole thing, in that people try to say, once again, they value things that their behavior does not reflect.
We're in conversation.
Just like our white oppressors.
We're in conversation with author and psychologist Dr. Jerome Fox. The book, Addicted to White, The Oppressed in League with the Oppressor. We got a couple calls here before we go to break. Let's go to the phones. 484-484. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I'm Dr. Crawford-Payne, and I'm calling from Philadelphia.
How are you, sir?
How are you doing?
Great.
I have just a couple of questions for Dr. Fox. How are you doing? Pleasure to listen to you, and I'm sure I'll get your book tomorrow.
Thank you.
I was interested in, first of all, the history of violence against African-American people, when they used to... In old times, when they used to bring their children to lynchings and hangings, and they would sell off body parts of the person being tortured.
Mm-hmm. And hang them in the butcher shops. Mm-hmm.
And that mentality, and how that mentality is being repeated in things like the Rodney King beating, where they took pleasure in beating this man.
Mm-hmm.
And my question to you is, in your opinion, is that something passed on through generations, through words, or is it some kind of genetic... It has some kind of genetic predisposition to that behavior.
Well, you know, I'm not going to comment on the genetic predisposition. Others have the lack of melanin in their skin or expressed melanin. They have the melanocytes, the cells, but it's not expressed. Maybe a culprit, but I would say this: once you get the book, you will discover, I think, in chapter 3, that I give a lengthy description of our white oppressors, a bulleted, maybe 20 bullets of how to understand our white oppressors, and one of the bullets concerns guilt. And I say that a lot of their reaction to us is based on not knowing how to handle their guilt. They know guilt is a natural offshoot of mistreating people. In fact, guilt is really an indication that there's been that there is an imbalance or implies. It implies transgression, and it involves fairness and balance in relationships. And there are inescapable demands or propulsions from the feeling of guilt. Now, you can answer those propulsions and impulses in a pro-social way or an anti-social way. A pro-social way is to do something like, you know, reparations, go out of your way to correct the damage that you've done. And obviously an antisocial response is to deny your guilt. And as a result, and we see this in this society, get really into defending yourself. We see this now even with the president and his response to his collusion with Russia. But we've seen it for centuries now, and even more in more modern times. All of this obsession with the Second Amendment, all these guns and all this stuff, when you are, as I think I say in the book, I'm trying to find it here. I can't find it exactly, but when you are guilty, you expect retribution, and in preparation for retribution, these white folks have become obsessed with, you know, guns and trying to defend themselves, because they know if given their lack of humanity, if the tables were turned, they would be thinking night and day how to get back at us for doing the things that they have done to us. So they can only assume. That's why, you know, white folk will be very uneasy when they see black folk, you know, coming together. Like, you know, they talk about, I remember when I was at school, one of the white parents said, you know, why do you all blacks sit together? As if they're assuming that we're scheming and planning on how to overcome them. I really wish we were, but we're not. So it's their guilt that causes them to be in this whole gun culture or whatever. But as I said, you can read more about it once you get the book. That's very, how very I good. See it.
In the interest of time, I'm just going to ask you another question. And that is, in your opinion, how would you combat the whatabout approach that I call it a whatabout approach, is Jackie Robinson in his book wrote, in order to maintain control, they'll use the term, what about Marian Anderson or Ralph Bunche or Jackie Robinson? They made it. And now the same exact technique is being used with Oprah Winfrey and LeBron James and Barack Obama. You know, okay. They kind of put – how would you
combat
that?
Well, you got it. You really have to get the book, because I believe it or not, I also address that. Remember, I just told you that I have this bulleted list of descriptors of the sociopathic white oppressor. And the very last bullet, I say that they win the collusion of reluctant white peers through disclaiming any wicked intention, pointing to a handful of so-called successful blacks, and to the decades-old toppling of a few legal monuments to anti-Africanism, you know, like that civil rights legislation. Today's oppressor denies that racism is a significant societal ill, or even worse, that racism still exists, as he or she ignores the quiet but steady increase of systemic inequalities between the two races. When blacks demonstrate the traumatic effects of protracted social and political repression, the white oppressors, ignorant spokespersons, be they journalists, pundits, or whoever, point their accusing crooked fingers not at the white oppressor, but instead at black people's so-called perpetual conflict with mainstream, i.e. white culture. So that's how that goes.
Fantastic. I'll make sure I pick your book up, Doctor. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call, sir.
Right. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Dr. Jerome Fox, the book Addicted to White, The Oppressed in League with the Oppressor. You can be involved in the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got some callers on hold, and we'll get to them right after the break. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services. Representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
In 1492, you came up on these shores, 700 years educated by the Moors. 17th century, genocide and the gun. Middle passage blessed to market the Africans in the so-called land of God. My kind were treated hard. From back then until now, I see and you agree, we have been a misrepresented people. From back then until now, just see my family tree, we have been a misrepresented people. We have been a misrepresented people.
My mom's and pops got hurt. From back misrepresented people.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're in conversation tonight with author, psychologist, Dr. Jerome Fox. The book, Addicted to White, The Oppressed in League with the Oppressor. You can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Dr. Fox.
Yes.
Let's go back a little bit. Because you mentioned when you started the conversation how Europeans have always planned ahead on how they wanted to deal with us and be skillful of dealing with us mentally, strategically. Yes. Let's go back to some things that were used against us historically. And I point to religion. When we came here, Europeans had a form of Christianity that they had adopted. They refused to expose it to our African ancestors until a point when they felt it was necessary or they deemed it was appropriate, put it that way. And when they did it, they cultivated people that they could trust, that they felt that they could trust to not only propagate messages to keep our people docile, but also to report on the activities of our people. Because just like you said, the strategy of it was they didn't want to do this until they could cultivate a group of people that could move around from plantation to plantation, and talk with other blacks, and get them to believe in a religion that will keep the people docile.
Right, and of course that was very well dramatized in the movie, in the Nat Turner movie.
Okay.
Because he started out as one of those preachers.
Yes.
But I will say this, that I, as you may know, recommend that when we gather together in these kinds of discussions in groups, that we do not discuss religion. And there are psychological reasons for that. It's one of the most deeply rooted ideas and values that a people have. And while it is true that our minds have been distorted with regard to our original regard for God, Amen. However you want to refer to the higher being, I recommend that this is a task that will eventually every time divide us rather than unite us. And we don't need to go there in order to take care of the business that I lay out in this book.
Listen, but I agree. But see, but I'm not going there to talk about religion. I'm going there to talk about the use strategic use, as far as Europeans was concerned, mm-hmm. of cultivating some of our people to propagate messages that they could control.
Right. And by the way, that's no different than, I'm sensitive to the fact that you're talking about a process and not a content.
Yes.
So I just want to broaden and make it more general, because when you just say religion, people clam up.
Okay, I understand.
But the important piece that I think you're saying is, once again, and you're talking about a process, a method.
Yes.
Of keeping us confused and basically enthralled with white people.
Let me throw this out, because that same approach is even used to this present day.
Absolutely. But it's also used in terms of our politicians.
Exactly.
They set up our politicians, not just our ministers, but also our politicians.
Yes.
It's very interesting that, and when you look at the situation in bed together, you will find most of our politicians and ministers. Because they're under the same spell.
Okay.
And that's, it's nothing about the content, by the way, of the religion or the scripture, because I use scripture, by the way, to introduce every chapter in my book, mm-hmm. to try to show people that you can use your scripture, whatever it is. It doesn't even necessarily have to be the Bible, but I know most of our people are Bible-toting people, so I take a scripture from the Bible and show you how it is giving us a formula for liberation. But so let me go back to your original point. My comments at least have nothing to do with the content of the person's religion, more to do with how it's being manipulated deceitfully to keep us oppressed.
Exactly.
But I say, but once again, the same strategy that you just described as used on our politicians as well,
mm-hmm.
who are also cultivated to placate the masses. I say that later on when I talk about us producing fodder when we have children for what I call the white supremacist industrial complex. And one of the roles that we fall into, dutifully fall into, are these politicians and what I call moneyed celebrities, black celebrities. You can throw in reverends as well, who have been trained to basically placate us. We look at them and think, we can have that too, because it's just human nature to want comfort and comforts. And we see them, with their comforts, and we think, if we just, put our shoulder to the wheel and keep our heads down and work really hard, as if we have not always worked really hard in the fields building this nation's economic base in the first damn place. But at any rate, if we work really hard, we'll get these people who are put in front of us will have what they have. And that's all a sham, but we fall for it.
But I'm looking at this section in chapter two where, because you're dealing with the power of usage of the Bible one way or another, and that's process or content. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at this particular part where you say the proposed self-help group recovery strategy parallels the biblical account of how the ancient prophet Amos warned the Israelites of a God judgment on sin. First, he denounced Israel's enemy and thereby captured his audience's attention. Then he speaks to the sin of Israel by only generally, which wins him the sympathy of his audience. Finally, Amos points out the individual sins of the members of the audience. So what I'm hearing in that, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that though most over the history of Black ministry, and I don't want to be too general, but there's been the usage of the Bible to be able, not to, as a liberating force,
but to be a
Bible to make people subservient to the system of white values, of white supremacy. Am I reading that right?
And also, yes, and also other religions as well, by the way. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that, you remember the so-called communists, referred to religion as the opiate of the people. Now, it does not, what I'm trying to point out is that it does not necessarily have to be. And it just so happens in that very same Bible, they are giving us a formula for overcoming oppression. And the three steps that I mentioned in chapter two, the three recovery steps, self-understanding, self-disclosure, and self-transformation really do parallel these two steps. As I say, the proposed self-help group recovery strategy starts with a review of the pathology of white oppressors, i.e. the enemies of Israel. And there, then it moves on to explain generally Africans' idolatrous response, as just as Amos did. And I give examples of how, I guess it's in chapter, is it in the same? Yeah, chapter three, of how, I give very specific examples of how we are addicted to this white value system, mentioning celebrities, not always by name, but you can figure out who I'm talking about. And then finally, you know, culminating in a specific inventory of each of our own vulnerabilities to this white value system. And that's the way to purge yourself of this nonsense. But, you know, it takes effort, and as far as I can tell, we're not that much interested in investing the type of effort that I'm proposing here, which is kind of sad.
Dr. Fox, to get involved in the conversation, dial 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Got a caller waiting, and I'm going to bring him into the conversation shortly. Let me throw this out, because I always, on this program, we always, along with discussing current events, we always reach back and discuss history, our experiences here, and historical figures that made an impact on our people here. I want to use one of our icons during the turn of the 19th century into the 20th century, W.E.B. Du Bois, whose life...
I quote him extensively in this book, but go ahead.
Okay, whose life to me basically went full circle. Now, let's look at his early life, because when I look at these addiction to white values, you can see it in him. Born in Brockton, I think he was born in Massachusetts, a fair-skinned black person. And
poorly pigmented.
Now, let me state, because we've had this conversation before and some people get offended, you know, and you mentioned about being able in these groups to table those things about offense because they seem to break groups apart. But I'm not saying these things for offense. I'm saying them so we can look at our experiences here and learn.
Yes, to wake us up.
Yes. Now, we can see that the creation, and I'll use that term creation, of poorly pigmented blacks was another strategy by Europeans for domination.
Divide and conquer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So when you had poorly, and I'm not saying all, but when you had some poorly pigmented blacks come along, they had a real addiction to white values because they look more European than the average black person. Mm-hmm. Now, W.B. Du Bois comes along. He has a problem with Booker T. Now, I'm looking at some of the values that you state here, and especially number five. The best way to feel good about yourself is outdoing and defeating someone else. He had a problem with Booker T. He wanted to start organizations that white folks had to be involved in. he wanted to create a talented 10th.
Yet at some point he separated, as you know,
yes.
And I mentioned this in the book too,
yes.
From the NAACP.
Exactly, but that's why I said his
too integrationist for his thinking. So he's developing and going back and forth.
Yes, that's why I said his life went full circle. After he left his problems with Booker T, after he passed, he just transferred him to Marcus Garvey, where it basically degenerated into name calling and him calling him, you know, all types of vulgar names. Now, let's look at that, because even in he was a highly intelligent black man, but he had enough sense to realize that he must have had an addiction to white values, as you term it, because he kept expressing about double consciousness.
Yes.
So,
well, you see,
go ahead.
That's why, though.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I want you to talk about that.
Let me just say this. That's why, once again, I insist upon starting out with the premise that we are all addicted.
Okay. All right.
Because if you don't do that, you'll find it hard to explain some of this behavior. Moreover, I go on to say, not only are we all addicted, but here in chapter 3, around the end of chapter 3, I give very specific principles that if we begin to hold these principles dear to our heart, we will be able to overcome this addiction, in addition to a list of very specific behaviors that we have to engage in order to, once again, be free from this kind of addiction. And one of those behaviors happens to address the issue that you just raised. What I say is we have to learn, number one, on how to talk to each other, with a focus on solution,
okay,
as opposed to clapping back and trying to demean and humiliate each other. And I asked in chapter 2, what are you willing to sacrifice? Most of us aren't even willing to sacrifice our damn ego in order to solve problems.
Wow.
I remember I had one of these half-breeds, scarcely pigmented bosses when I was working, and I remember the head of the region, he really respected me, but he feared me. So we didn't get along because I was one of the few people. He was much like Trump. And I was one of the people that did not adore him and praise him and whatever. And I remember this scarcely pigmented black person who happened to be my immediate supervisor saying, well, you just got to eat crow sometimes, Jerome, because I was constantly fighting back for things that were wrong. And I thought about that. Okay, now he's willing to eat crow for this white boy, but are we willing to eat crow for each other? We won't even set aside our ego and talk about what are we willing to sacrifice in order to progress and get along with each other. But here's the point I make at the end of chapter 3, one of the very specific behaviors. Be grateful for the sacrifices other Africans have made on behalf of the race, despite minor or major disagreements over ideology or personal conduct.
Okay.
Reward and support Africans with a thank you for any recovery behavior they display, even when mingled with addictive behavior. Share thoughts about one another candidly, but still work together to fight oppression. Practice depending on one another, not the white oppressor, for mutual acceptance. A grave impediment to upholding this behavioral standard is our regressive wish for perfection in one another, particularly our leaders, who admittedly are too often puffed up and drunk with the little authority they have been given. But having been down so long, we are in a perpetual search for a sinless deliverer. frustrated by contradictions in our leaders and celebrities, we are too quick to kick them to the curb for any lapse into white value dependency. Greater efforts to harvest the good, even a hardcore white value addict occasionally produces, must be made. So that's how I deal with that.
Okay.
And that's why I can very liberally quote Dubois and acknowledge his genius.
Yes.
About those things that he was genius about, and just put aside those things which were not.
Yes.
Which they were not genius about, particularly in terms of avoiding white addiction.
Okay.
And as we go through this, and because you brought up that, you know, I'm looking at, we again reiterating, this manual is a self-help manual. We have to be clear, you know, to the listening audience, right? And that it's a workbook that people have to actually, as you say, it's a doing thing.
Implement,
right?
Yes,
right.
You have to implement.
And so in this doing, it requires the individuals who assemble to take particular roles. And what you all were just addressing raises this other point I see, and it's two sides to I see in the process to deal with the self-help, and that is the leadership side, and what does the, I'm calling it emerge, but what does the group emerge to? In here, you say that there are three major leadership functions. Could you elaborate on those leadership functions and why they are so important for the
right.
leader?
And thank you for pointing that out. This, once again, this is in chapter two, probably in most people's eyes, the most boring chapter in the book. And it's only boring because we are not focused on really doing anything about all the things that we claim about. Because in chapter two, and that's why I kind of wanted to zero in on chapter two, I lay out the mechanics of doing something. And you were saying,
those three major functions for the leader.
Right.
Right.
I'm trying to find. Emotional function includes. Right. Okay. So I talk about developing these AA-like meetings, and I call them Into Blessedness Fellowships. Into being spelled as E, really an acronym. ENTO, and those letters stand for a biblical passage in which we are reminded in Proverbs to envy not the oppressors and choose none of their ways. And I believe if a lot of our protest is out of envy of our white oppressors, and as long as we continue to envy them, they got us. We want a piece of their pie as opposed to creating our own entree. So with this Into Fellowship, it has to be facilitated by someone. And so I'm saying the facilitator, probably in most cases, is the person who takes the initiative to gather his friends or her friends and start working through this workbook, has to understand that there's a series of functions rather than a person. You know, we call it the facilitator, but really the facilitator embodies certain functions. In the early stages of a new group, members look to the facilitator to fill all of these functions. But as the group matures, the leadership role should be distributed more evenly among the members. There are, and these three major leadership functions or facilitator functions are emotional, task-related, and practical maintenance. The emotional function includes recognizing psychological needs as they emerge in the meetings, and assisting members in managing those needs through For instance, giving attention to a silent member, praising the actions of another member, reframing conflict among members, during the meeting, as an opportunity to gain trust and so forth. The task, and I say more about this, I devote a whole chapter to just the meetings, the facilitated, et cetera, that being chapter 6, I believe, of the book. But anyway, the task function, leadership function or facilitator function, focuses the group on its purpose, on the meeting's agenda, and on decision-making procedures when necessary. The practical maintenance function covers housekeeping chores, including securing the room, arranging the chairs as the chairs should be in a circle. I noticed in the class that I'm running at PASSEP, once again at 1509 Cecil B. Moore Avenue on the second floor, you can join us. I take them through a mini demonstration of this whole procedure, and I've noticed that I'll purposefully come into the meeting room just a little bit after some of the students gather in there. And when I first started out, they were leaving it up to me to arrange the chairs in a circle. Now that they've got caught on, particularly the one member who came back for this second semester, when I get there, the chairs are already arranged. So he's taking on that maintenance function, just as it should be.
And the reason why I liked that definition, because I the way I see it, when we talk about an African community and the leadership, we one thing that we do all the time is looking at our, as you mentioned earlier, the political leadership, the religious leadership. And it seems that those three functions, that's the way we should be evaluating either ourselves, whether we really have the leadership, want to take the leadership role, or be evaluating others.
I say that all of us have it in us. And as a matter of fact, part of our recovery is discovering our capacity to fill all of those functions. We currently have been sort of lulled into almost a coma in which we just want to be fed almost intravenously. We're constantly looking for our white people to do the right thing. And basically correct the damage that they've done to us. And I'm saying that's not going to happen, even though that's a perfectly legitimate demand to make. But we're dealing with, once again, in the terms of James Baldwin, we're dealing with monsters who obviously don't have the capacity to self-correct. So we're going to have to take the bull by the horn and discover our agency and discover our capacity to do these things for ourselves. As I say later on in the book, really basically paraphrased in Minister Farrakhan, we have to stop asking people to do those things for us that we should and can do for ourselves.
Let me go to the phone.
And each of us. You know, don't wait for, and that's why I tell people, by the way, when I've been on other shows, that I'm setting up any kind of speakers bureau. You don't need me to come to your town or your place and set up these meetings for you. You can do it yourself, and you must do it for yourself. It's a part of your recovery. Doing it for yourself is a vital part of your recovery.
Let's go to
I'm
six.
I'm not hustling nothing, except this book.
Let's go to 646. Area code 646.
Yes, good evening, Richard Elliott and Mr. Fox. A couple of quick questions. To start off with, in your summation, do you think the biggest problem of the American black is his love for the Sky Daddy or his love for the Yoruku?
I didn't hear that. Could somebody please rephrase that?
Well, you might have to make it a little clearer, Jay.
All right. Do you think the biggest problem of American blacks is his love for Jesus Christ, God Almighty, or the white man? Which one?
Well, obviously, our impediment is our really, to use your words, sir, our love for white, period. And we're so in love, and I point this out to people, too, that we are so in love with white, including white people. And if you get the book, I give a very clear example of that in talking about P. Diddy and some of the things that he has said about just white in general as to how in love he is with white. But further, I deal with this whole question of these white images of God, clearly indicating that we worship white and white people far more than we worship God. And I base that on the fact that at least within the Christian tradition, their own scripture forbids them in Deuteronomy and another place, forbids them to make any kind of image, what they call a graven image, of things above or below. So no red-tailed devils and no white Jesus Christs. But we have been so oppressed psychologically that we're willing, and so-called even devout Christians, willing to ignore that mandate from supposedly God himself, not to make an image, black or white, red, green, or whatever, not to make an image of things above, meaning celestial beings, including God, or things below, like the devil or whatever. We're willing to ignore that, claiming to be devout, once again, religious people, in order to serve this devil that we serve. And so clearly, and I lay that out very clear in the book. I was thinking about right. I say at one point in one of the behaviors that I'm recommending that we engage in, I say, remove all pictures and graven images of your supreme being from, I don't care whether it's Muslim or Christian or whatever. Remove all pictures and graven images, that's a quote, graven images, of your supreme being from your surroundings. And in your mind's eye, avoid images of a European-looking supreme being. These false and forbidden spectacles reinforce powerfully the notion that black isn't good enough to portray celestial beings, or even worse, that being black is the opposite of being divine, good, or praiseworthy. If the most important entity in an African's life is God, and the image of God is a Caucasian, then it is no wonder that white values have a stranglehold on the African mind. The Malaysian government denounced certain car advertisements on Malaysian TV that featured Brad Pitt, a famous white Caucasian actor, stating that the ads were insulting to Asians and that ads featuring models who do not look Asian plant a sense of inferiority among Asians. The government asks rhetorically, aren't our own Malaysian people handsome enough? Now, if Malaysians are able to recognize that a TV commercial featuring a white look can puncture their self-esteem, Why then is it so difficult for Africans to accept that Caucasian gods, be they Muslim, Christian, or whatever, and celestial beings likewise cultivate a mind-wrecking, soul-splitting sense of inferiority within them? Clearly, oppression is made easy when the oppressed believe in a god whose pictorial representation on earth happens to look just like the oppressor. So I hope that answers your question.
So basically, what you say is it's lost cause for the Negro because of his blatant love and desire of wanting to be held and hold by the white man for his approval and his acceptance and his love, with the black man being unwilling to weed himself off of the tick of the white man then.
Well, I don't think it's a lost cause.
Well, no, sir, I wouldn't exactly say that, because if I felt that way, I wouldn't have written the book in the first place. I'm saying that if you're not a lost cause, let's make it personal. If you are not a lost cause, then there has to be others like you,
yes,
who are not lost causes.
I understand. But still, no, we're not in the same equation on this. I'm not in that equation because I don't like the question. I came at you from a whole level and referred to him as the Yoruba. I'm at that stage. Where you're talking about, that's where the Negro Kings and them others. I understand where you're coming from. I'm just trying to get you to the point with my last question was going to be, then if that's the case, how do we solve the problem of the love of this filthy, no good, stinky cracker? Because it's just what you're saying and what I'm saying and what we understanding as one is, we really love this devil to the point to where it's a psychosis. So I want to know, how do we change it?
Okay, and guess what? My book tells you how to change it.
Okay.
You have to get it and read it. My book tells you how to change it.
But I think it's important to emphasize, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Fox, that the question of whether we're all addicted or not. See, mm-hmm. And you said it earlier in the opening, all of us are dealing with this. And even if we believe that we're not, because if we believe that we're not, then it just...
That's value number five. Trying to put ourselves above the our brothers and sisters. We love being in conflict with each other. We love pointing the finger at someone else. You know, you're Sambo, I'm not. And that's value number five. If that's a white value. I'm saying stop all that and just concentrate, number one, on your own white addiction, and once you do that, it may give you more compassion and also more insight and to your fellow black person and their white addiction, and you may, through concentrating on how you've been freeing yourself from white addiction, you might be able to help some of those people that you once thought were hopeless.
But there's a conflict to that argument, though. You understand, right? You know that the conflict, in a sense, to that argument is that you can't be in the position to constantly wait for your oppressor, number one, to change his behavior, or you to change your behavior towards the oppressor, when the one that you're fighting against is the one that's loving the oppressor and protecting the oppressor against both parties' interests. So that's why, if you notice what happened over in China, Mao had to go about the business of cutting off the heads of those that did not agree and come to his position. That's one of the biggest problems that we here in this country is having. We that know are not doing the necessary things to behead those who want to be an affiliation.
Well, that may be so, sir. At some point, that may have to occur. But I'm saying for right now, there has to be a critical mass of black people that come together and understand all these things that I write in this book for us to move forward, for us to move forward and be able to do exactly what you are implying, which is basically to set up our own government. Right now, and you and I may disagree about this, but right now we have not developed that critical mass. And
but the point is, sir, the point of the situation is this. We've been going through this for over...
No, we have not been going through what I'm talking about. We've been going through jumping on the battlefield, thinking that we have our heads straight and call ourselves, you know, demanding this and demanding or fighting.
I don't believe that.
We have not taken the time to rid our minds of this white addiction. That's the one step, and it happens to be the first step. That's the one step that we refuse to take, and that's all of us. We have not done this before.
Some of us have, and those that have has been cascaded by society and set aside, and those ones.
That's because there was not a critical mass.
Let me finish the point. No, the critical mass is always the dominant position. That's why we're in the position that we're in. It's those who are against the dominant position that haven't figured out how to unite with one another to place us in a position to deal with the dominant mass. This is why we constantly in the conflict that we in the direction of black people in this country. That's why you have the Al Sharptons of the world. That's why you have Jesse Jackson of the world. Because those of us who know better are not in the position collectively like you asking us to
do. Yeah, that's the critical mass I'm talking about, sir. Those of us who know better are not numerous enough. We need more of us, in a sense. We need more of us. And I'm saying this process that I lay out in the book is an effort to recruit more of us. That's the critical mass I'm talking about. Talking about a critical mass of us. We need more of us in order to accomplish what you're talking about. Right now, if we step out there and call us so chopping off heads or whatever, we would be chopped off before we get to the first Al Sharpton head. Okay.
Yeah, but you know, in that equation, in all honesty, there has to be sacrificial lambs in the slaughter. There has to be those that are willing to take that position to open up the eyes and put a little fear into those Negroes that constantly sell us out. That's what was happening in a sense in the 60s, and the white boy figured that out
that's
quick.
Been done,
and he
and
did
you
it,
see where
and
we're
he
at.
Did his
thing. Those people were
and
martyred.
We moved, and no, but they may have been martyred, but that was a call to action from those of us that know. They just didn't come along because I truly believe we picked some of the wrong ones to go after. You understand? That whole leadership in the black community should have really been the ones that have been targeted. Then if they were targeted properly, you wouldn't have the Al Sharpton and the Jesse
Jackson. Yeah, but why is that? Why weren't they targeted?
Why weren't they targeted?
Answer that question. Why weren't they targeted?
I think because
we were not not enough of us.
I think we had a love. Let me finish the point. I think we had a love of those individuals with the hope that they would turn around and act in a certain fashion instead of just dealing with them. And I understand your point. I'm not disagreeing with your point, Mr. Fox. I'm just saying that you have to gradually get to a point. understand who is oppressing you, and those that are oppressing you, their tentacles that are out there helping and assisting them, and the ones that are out there assisting them, we have a love for, and we don't want to deal with them. But I agree. I think where you're coming from. I'm not in disagreement with you. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, basically, that we're not making the hard choices, and I understand what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
That it's not enough of us to do what needs to be done. But believe me, there's us out there who understand.
Yeah, let's conclude with this, that we do understand each other, and my whole effort is centered around trying to get enough of us. I write in the book two thoughts for the day. One being, which some people take umbrage at, is that I define slave just as I define power and authority and a lot of other life definitions that I think we are confused about. And I say slave is one whose basic affects or emotions are restricted to shame and fear. Collectively, African Americans are the progeny of cowards. Those who surrendered to this slave mentality in exchange for physical survival only. What is worse, this heritable cowardice has led African Americans unwittingly into modern-day slavery, devouring, exploiting, and neglecting each other at the silent behest of the white oppressor. With brains scrambled by white values, Africans become functionally white oppressors, and their encounters with each other are no different than the real white oppressors' encounters with us. The black functionally white policewoman or man is just as apt to kill unarmed blacks. The black functionally white teacher is just as likely to miseducate his black students. The black functionally white reverend, politician, businessman is just as likely to deceive and exploit the black community. The black functionally white TV journalist is just as likely to abandon her search for truth in favor of feeding the entertainment punditry mill with lazy, false equivalencies, self-constricting dichotomies, harebrained predictions, and blatant misrepresentations of black life under hostile white rule. And the black, functionally white KKK style hooded hoodlum is just as prone to, quote, hate on a nigga. Now, snarky white races are quick to highlight these white value dependent Africans who do the same thing to other blacks that the white races are accused of doing. Not surprisingly, however, the same white races are slow to remember that these addicted, cowardly surrogates, i.e. slaves, have been forged by unrelenting white oppression for the purpose of extending white oppressors' reach into and control over black communities. And all I'm saying is that still within that whole mess, there are our people out here who can recover from their white addiction. And all I'm saying is that my task is to gather those people and hopefully build a critical mass that can take some of the bold steps that perhaps you have spoken about tonight. That's all.
Good job, my friend. I'm enjoying what you're saying, and keep up the good work. And
get the book and read it. It's no use if you don't get the book and read it.
I'll have it the next time you're on. I've been there ready. Have a good day.
Thank you for your call, Jay. All right.
All right, then.
I wanted to raise another structural thing in this that comes out of this chapter that's a part of the fellowship. Well, let me make this comment to me. And you know that, and I'm being formal, right, Dr. Fox, right? So you know, Dr. Fox, me and you go back and forth around some other things, but I do agree that the process, this is another one of those things that we've talked about it before, where I believe the structural process can be applied to any kind of organization. Let me back up. I believe that the structural process should be applied to all Black organizations as a means of, the way I perceive it, as an entry-level process in order to identify those individuals, in order to orientate them for the task that they need in order to assist in whatever kind of organization, business, social service organization, or whatever. Because until we have a process to identify those individuals and that process that really assists in separating those values, we'll always have our organizations being where we started out earlier, stagnant. Right.
You and I have talked about that, and I do, and my typical response is that indeed, yes, this workbook or this process is compatible with any organization. You can take this workbook and demand that your members or your employees go through this process. As a way of securing their membership or their employment. So, yes, it's compatible as long as it's done. And I would say through doing it, just as you just said, you may find that you are better able to recruit people who are really dedicated to your business or your organization.
And so what I see is the question that came in my mind, you have that the groups should be gender, single gender specific. Mm-hmm. Why do you say that? Why do you
my experience in treating many, many, many people, there's too much, the temptation, you know, just like the temptation to get bogged down in religion and then split off, the temptation romancing, getting involved with each other, because once again, if you look at the procedure, it gets to be pretty. Some of the topics that would be discussed are fairly intimate, and I separate the men from the women, almost like the Nation of Islam does, in order to avoid any flirting or whatever, to keep the mind focused on the task. And also too, I think this is less of a problem with women. With our women, or perhaps women in general, but far more of a problem with males, is that we're so busy trying to posture that we're not going to be as frank about some of these topics in the presence of women, quite frankly.
Let's go to another call. Let's go to 773.
You got me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, thank you for taking this call. You're having a good show and enjoying that guest there. James Baldwin, he mentioned James Baldwin. James Baldwin also said, history is not the past. James Baldwin said, history is not the past. He said, history is the present.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So all the evils we've seen in the present, in the past, genocide, people being exterminated, lynched. Mm-hmm. We're going to see it again, and we'll start to see it now.
Well, let me now, just say this, sir. Let me just say this in response to that. I see it is even more perhaps tragic than how you interpreted it. History is the present that we are experiencing right now, because our history has led us to become collaborators with our oppressors. That's why you see a gang activity, us killing each other on drugs, speaking about our women, calling them hoes and bitches and all of this other stuff. That's just because, and I explained this in the book too, that's all based on our history. So we don't have to wait to see our past show up in our present. It's here.
No, I'm talking not talking about we're going to wait to see it. We're going to experience it again.
Yeah, we are experiencing it right now.
Right, but it's going to keep turning up, Professor.
Yes,
it's going to keep turning up to the
you.
Final assault. That's my
yes.
point.
Yes.
It's going to keep. Now, you called Mr. Hitler in the White House a clown. I know you're probably saying that jokingly, because he's not a clown. He's a deadly, evil psychopath.
Yes.
And just as Mr. Hitler did not overthrow the power structure in Germany, Donald Hitler Mussolini dump did not overthrow the power structure here. The power structure in Germany put Hitler in. Mm-hmm. The power structure here put Donald Hitler in here.
Mm-hmm.
Black people going to have to ask themselves, why did the power structure put this type of person in? What is he supposed to do? What is he supposed to usher in? Now, I want to ask this. Y'all spoke about Du Bois. Did anybody ever have any information? He ever apologized to Marcus Garvey before Garvey died?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he said that it was a bad decision to be engaged in that back
of warfare.
Back at that time. So it is a document that he did make reference that was a bad choice once.
Okay.
And that was especially as he was preparing to what he gave up his citizenship and went to Ghana.
Okay, brother, he mentioned it, but he didn't specifically apologize to Garvey for how he had did him and talked
well,
about
Well, I don't believe Garvey was alive.
Alive then. At that time. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, this is my final thing here. The white supremacist, Professor, do you talk about genocide and extermination in your book?
Now, here again, I do, as I said earlier, I give a long, bulleted list of in chapter 3, by the way, of the white oppressor, how to view the white oppressor is. But I quickly kind of pivot to what we need to do about it, as opposed to just spending all the time once again describing the white oppressor. I'm saying, okay, here's a thorough description, 20 or so, I don't know, bullets on the white oppressor. And I do refer to the white oppressor as narcissistic sociopaths. And then I give the bulleted list. But beyond that, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about how bad they are. You should already know that.
Right, I understand that.
My question is, what do we do about it?
Okay, I understand what you said.
It's about what we do about them.
I understand what you said, but in the book, do you say that their final objective for us here is to eliminate us?
I do, yes, and I talk about fear and how they play on our fear, and I give an example. As a result of that, they offer us a what I call a Faustian deal, that I'll preserve your life if you give up your physical life, rather, if you give up your mental and spiritual life. And then I give an example of how O.J. Simpson took that deal and where it leads to, it always leads to death. And then I give another example of how Native Americans, right after the, I guess it was right after the Civil War, they started trying to so-called Christianize or convert Native Americans, and how all of that, they built a school in Pennsylvania, as a matter of fact, and a so-called industrial school, and how everybody who entered that school, all the Native Americans, children who entered that school, wound up dead.
Okay, let me close with this. Black people and all decent human beings, you done heard me, you know where I'm coming from, and I'm going to make it plain again. All of this police violence, assassinating black people on camera, school shooting, crazy stuff just going all out in the media, racial crazy stuff. They are setting black people up to be exterminated. Now, this is plain to see if you just do a little thinking. They have to create an atmosphere for the extermination to take place. We have to be dehumanized. They've been doing that to us since we were enslaved. We have never regained our humanity to this day. That's why they will not apologize for slavery. They won't pay us reparations. They won't give us a state and say, y'all govern yourself. They will not do these things because they are not finished with us. They don't want to put us up in the limelight, say, oh, we did this to these people. Let's try to do something for them. They are not going to do that when they're coming to exterminate us.
Mm-hmm. Right. Why we have to reshape our minds. And this book addresses that. We're far less vulnerable. If we would be far less vulnerable to their efforts to exterminate us if we were not so enthralled with them. So my book ventures to break our, as I say on the cover, shame-based alliance with our oppressor.
But that's good to hear.
Which will lead to our extermination.
That's good to hear. Let me tell you this, brother. We don't have time for the man because they after our behind.
I could not disagree with you more.
We are in grave danger here.
We've been in grave danger ever since we stepped
on this continent. That's not
and
true.
And the one task that we have refused to
that's
accomplish
not true.
Is this mine.
Is we have this not, mine. No, we haven't
people
always
have been
in.
Lynched, Jeffrey Dahmert. Our members cut off just like an earlier caller said and hung up in butcher shops. Ever since we stepped, we're dragged from Mother Africa to this continent. And the one thing that we have refused to do is free our minds.
Yes.
And that is the first step, as I said repeatedly, to allowing us to unify and do those things that would protect us from these homicidal sociopaths.
Okay, brother, let me respond to that. We have not been in grave danger ever since we've been here.
Yeah, no, I don't agree with that, Brother X. Our people have been in grave danger since we've been here.
Let me finish this point, bro.
Go ahead. Wind it up now.
Okay, we were a commodity. We was property. Nobody wants to destroy or throw away their property or abuse it.
What? Okay. You better study some more history then. If they didn't want to abuse their property, then maybe we whistling. We don't know what we're talking about.
No, what I'm saying, but right now they had us to work. They don't need us today. So now they can do away with us and wipe the slate clean of us. What I want black people to do is wipe the atmosphere in this country. If black people have been treated like this ever since we've been here, shot down on camera, when you see all this other violence, ask yourself,
well,
what position?
Well, let me ask you this, Brother X. Let me ask you this.
How does it relate to us?
Let me ask you this. What do you propose to do? What do you propose to do?
Exactly.
If black people are able or have the opportunity, I would suggest they think seriously about escaping.
Okay, now hold it. Because you wait a minute. Because you've said that before. Now let me ask, and I've said this and I responded to you before by saying this. Okay, black people escape and go wherever. If they have If they have the same mindset that they have here, as the doctor has stated, addicted to white values, I term it something else, but I fully agree with what he's talking about. If they have the same mindset, it don't matter if you go to Mars, you're going to have problems. Our people are going to have problems. The solution has to start with the mind. It you can't get around it.
Because we will continue to devour each other.
Okay, let me respond to that.
We need the white man to do that.
Let me respond to that. Each person who decides to get out of here.
Sir, I can tell you, you can talk until next year. We are not going to agree on this.
Because you don't have to agree, brother.
You keep saying that we need to do X, Y, and Z. Why aren't we doing it then? Why aren't we doing it? Brother, we're on a talk show.
We're not protecting ourselves.
Why?
Well, brother, each person would have to decide that. If this black people done left here, but let me say this, I'm going to close. Each person, if they decide to leave or try to escape, they will have to do that on their own. They will have to pick a place for themselves or their family. They might have relatives somewhere. I'm not telling them to go. I'm telling them if they want to have a chance for life, because there's going to be a mass slaughter here. And it's being set up with all this violence and this putting Donald Hitler in. They're going to keep turning the heat up until it explodes. Black people have no armed struggle against these people here. These people run the world.
Come on,
so
man. Now, here you go. I think your addiction to white values is showing because you can't do anything against this great white father. He got so much power. That's addiction to white values, man. You got an addiction to white values.
His homeland. This is his land.
Okay,
brother.
All right.
Now we can fight and do all that other stuff.
We're not fighting.
This is his land. He will do as he please.
White
That's
values
why you got people running around with assault
weapons. The entire world, including Africa. Examples of that.
That's right, they do. So, you can still go somewhere and avoid this all-out extermination.
Yeah, so it's about
anybody to think about avoiding that.
Dubois spoke about that, too. I talk about that in the book. The escapism. In fact, let me see if I can get that real quick. Right? The individualism versus, whatever.
That's the point.
That same posture about, either escape someplace else or into the white power structure to become a part of it, and how that will never free the masses of black people. Now, you may not be concerned about the masses of black people. You may only be concerned about yourself. And, yeah, that may work. But I'm talking about how do we as a people, not just me.
Come on, Professor. Don't play with people's lives with all this killing going on today and this psychopath in the White House.
All right,
people ain't finna do nothing to these psychopaths and they den. This is their country.
Okay.
You got all them white boys running around with assault weapon, gun, school shoot. This is all a setup to create an atmosphere for us to be slaughtered en masse. And the world is going to accept it because the white man run the world.
Okay. Now, here we go.
That bad things got out of hand. All I'm telling people is look at who we're dealing with. Look at the power they possess. Stop playing
with
yourself.
They don't possess any power, by the way, but go ahead.
They don't possess. They run the world.
Okay, Brother X, listen, I'm going to let you go.
Authority,
and space.
But not power.
I'm going to let you go.
They run the world and outer space.
All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's all-knowing and all-seeing.
Some place they ain't running.
Brother X,
he's got the Chinese licking up behind him.
He's all knowing and he's all seeing. Thank you for your call, sir.
Tell me who challenging us. Tell me who putting a serious challenge on the great white father.
All right, Come on now.
Name him.
Come on.
Who ready to go up against him and his
brother. Your addiction is showing. Brother X, your addiction is showing.
Afghanistan got their own country. That's another thing.
I'm going to let you go, man. Come on, I'm going to let you go. Thank you for your call.
From discussing this book, okay?
Yeah.
Can we just let that go?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's go to another call. Let's go to
some discipline here.
Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix?
Yes. Hello?
Let me just say, before you speak, sir, that's an example of how easily we can be distracted from really taking care of our business, not just me and my escape. But that whole kind of conversation just demonstrates to me how easily we can be distracted from taking care of our business. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, Brother Fox, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Brother Marco.
No worries, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. You know, the price is not here, you know. The price is not America for black people. It's not America. It is Africa. That is the price, you know. And I think that's why probably the brother out of Chicago was trying to say, look, you know, we should really push some emphasis for Africa, because that is where the mass majority of our people are. It's not here in America. And it's not, I tell the truth to them. A lot of these black people here, they're not dumb. They know what the hell going on too. Our people going along for the ride too now. They ain't so ignorant now, you know. A lot of our people ain't so ignorant. But when, you know, Garvey said, when all else fail to organize the people, conditions will. Now, I think what the brother was saying, the brother in Chicago, said we have to take some light to it, because you see, look at the racial climate of the country right now. If something was to happen to Trump and a black man did it, what do you think would happen in America, given the racial climate now in America? What do you think the backlash would be for black people?
Oh, listen, anything could happen. And I agree with what you're saying.
Exactly.
But Brother Marcus, what I try to get him to understand is, sure, we see the stuff in the environment that we live in. That's all the more reason that we need to find some type of strategies to rally around one another. That's our only salvation. We got to have a strong mind and strong relationships in order to get through this. We can't do it by willy nilly people packing up, running where he don't really mention. Go ahead, Dr. Fox.
In the book itself, I give examples of how the spread in chapter one, as a matter of fact, the spread of white value addiction throughout the world. I talk about Ghana. I talk about South Africa. I talk about Equatorial Guinea. And you have to read it, but you will see that the corruption, particularly in Equatorial Guinea, where the ruling family is taking all the tax money that they get from ExxonMobil, and using it to fund a lavish Western so-called luxurious lifestyle.
Because their mind is damaged.
While their people are living at the gray's mouth. It's everywhere. Are everywhere.
But what I'm saying,
at some point, we have to stand our ground and confront our own addiction to them. I don't care where we find ourselves.
True, but in order to have independence, you have to have land. And that's why Africa is so important. It is the landmark.
Yes, nobody's denying that. But I'm just saying that if you look at many of those governments, to be honest, and here again, because of this process, you have to be honest.
They are
addicted as well. They're stripping their hair as well. They're obsessed with long hair, long straight hair, as much as we are.
White psychology and white supremacy was thorough. We agree on that. We agree with that. But what I am saying that you need an environment. You need your own environment. You see, in this year's society, this year where we live, the Negro get rewarded for bad behavior. That's why he do the foolishness he do. You see, he ain't doing it. He know why the hell he's doing it.
Over in our native land, the Negroes there are being rewarded for bad behavior, too.
But
that's
it's not the
over. So
it's the ruling elite, though. It's the ruling elite, which is not the majority. Our power lies with the people. You see,
the youth in many of these countries, they're as hopped up on so-called rap music and so-called hip-hop culture as
we
are.
Everybody follow the black youth here. The black youth here in the West set the trend for the world.
That's right, and I'm saying, yes, and they're following it.
So we are the point people now. We are the people.
But Brother Marcus,
in Africa, you know.
Brother Marcus, you kind of make it.
Your presence alone in Africa could change. Because, look, you go to Africa, right? They don't have running water. They don't have it. You're not going to live like that. You're going to bring that change. But as I said, Garvey said this 100 years ago. He said, look, you got to get these people out of here and get them in a different environment. Yes.
And how do we do that?
Change.
How do we do that, by the way?
We're
going
to develop an internal corrective force to make the Negro do the right thing. He ain't going to do it by
how do we get that?
That's what.
How do we get that?
Organization. We organize. That's the same thing we were talking about.
Brother Marcus, hold on one second. All the man is saying is that we have to break this addiction to white values before we do anything.
I agree. We're not disagreeing.
Okay, well, then we don't have to. Then we don't have to necessarily. Then we don't necessarily have to go back and forth.
We're on the same page. We're not disagreeing.
Okay.
All I am saying is that you want the Negro voluntarily here in America to change. He ain't going to change.
No. Well, he's not saying. He's not saying voluntarily change. He's not saying that at all.
Right. Well, we got to develop and have an internal corrective force to deal with these wrong acting Negroes.
Well, that's what he's talking about.
Organize the same way you're talking about. Organization is the key.
The black man is going to have to
study the mechanics of organization because that is the problem.
We've done that. Thanks for your call, man.
What I want to add is that the way I always see that we move to, because we're talking about things and, you know, it just seems as difficult on this, what's the first thing first. Because those of us who say we see, the process to me seems to be for us. Because if the assumption is, and I noticed, you know, in the chapter you have a group of assumptions that you laid out, but that's towards what is supposed to happen. But one of the assumptions we laid out in the beginning of the show is that all of us are addicted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of us are saying with our addiction that I'm only going to think about me. Some of us are going to say, what you going to do about the others? And some of us are saying with our addiction that we need the place to deal with it. But the seems that what you're laying out is that we need to deal those of us who see, not the ones who first, it won't be the ones, and you raised the question of critical mass. It won't be the ones who don't see that they're addicted. It's the ones who realize, and that might be a touchy thing, because those of us who there's those of us who realize, as you say, what the problem is, but do we those who realize what the problem is, are we also saying we are addicted and causing the problem?
Yes.
Because the process is for those who are addicted, who want to move away from their addiction so that they could be able to be, in doing that, solving the problem. Because you can't have organization if you're still addicted. You can't go nowhere as an individual and go someplace safe if you're still addicted, because everybody else is addicted. You can't do nothing to those who are addicted, because you're such of a small number that you will be plucked off by the defense mechanisms that are there. So it's good for us to bring the, I mean, what I hear in the process of utilizing the process, I hear that it's good, but what I, and you lay out, because it's a value-based process that affects our behavior, when we can't even communicate,
because
we can't see that we and our individual self who's trying to create the solution is also expressing our addiction.
You're right. That's right.
Becomes a problem.
You know,
couldn't say it better.
We're going to take a break in a minute, but let me say something, and we got to call Holden. I just want to give a little example before we leave, before we take a break. You know, Dr. Fox, in your book, you talk about setting up small groups to talk about this problem. And also
detoxify, and also
develop strategies to move our people forward. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been involved in groups before, plenty of groups. Richard, I'm quite sure yourself.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of groups set up and they use Robert's Rules of Order. They use parliamentary procedures. I'm talking about black groups. Now, you set up some rules of order and how we should deal with groups in your book.
Yes.
Now, if that is not a symptom of addiction to white, and I've been involved, and I'm talking about some serious brothers and sisters, but they'll set up a group based on Robert's Rules of Orders or parliamentary procedures. That's addiction to white. Why do we have to set up our group based on some type of procedures that Europeans have put forth?
Well, I think we lose our capacity to think more scientifically. Like, you choose your definitions of life, you know, what is power, what is authority, what works best in order for us to communicate with each other and in a profitable way. Now, if that's Robert's rules or Fox's rules, it really should not matter. The aim is to for everybody to be heard and for everybody to feel valuable, like their contribution was valuable. And whatever rule that serves those aims, that's the rule that we should adopt.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we can still get in because we still got a little bit of time left, and we got to call it waiting too, and we'll take him right after the break, and you can get involved in the conversation too. We have author and psychologist Dr. Jerome Fox, the book Addicted to White, The Oppressed and League with the Oppressor. When we come back from the commercial too, also, Dr. Fox, you can tell people how they can get the book and things of that nature before we take the next call. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
Bobby, hit me deep in the garbage, man. Come on, grab that water, man.
Yeah.
Speak to him, Lord.
Somewhere, a black man's eyes wells up in the dark. Away from his peers. Away from his queen. Away from his offspring.
That's right.
Coming to a fork in the road and not realizing that he cannot stand still. Cause sometimes life isn't about right or wrong, just left or right.
Gotta keep it moving.
The stress, the pressure, the respect of your woman, the admiration of your child. Almost obsolete, as the breadwinner, when the flower is provided by the enemy. If your only resource is labor, or at least that's what they'll pay for.
Slavery, God.
What happens when they can get it for cheaper?
Man up.
Have we got an amnesia as to what a man is and what a man does?
Like how?
Is the possibility of death too great? Is the fear of physical confinement hindering your proper judgment?
I just got locked up last week.
See, death is a guarantee. And you might just get knocked just because.
That's word.
Now, your woman condescends, cause she just can't understand how she could get a job, but you cannot.
Gotta create our own job.
And look at the places you go, and the people you fraternize with, cause they say a lot about your character. And whether you are who you say you are.
Soldier.
White supremacy has struck a deadly blow, but our vital signs persist. When we know better, an excuse is just an excuse.
Right up, stop talking.
And whether you fully comprehend or not,
Lord,
you're a man.
Stand up, let them know, Lord.
And manhood is your birthright.
Stand up.
It is your job to know what that entails, black man.
Stand up, man.
and it cannot be defined by our natural adversary. For his ways are not ours. Do we allow our boys to be feminized? Do we allow our girls to be masculinized? Because sheep get on the defensive? Or do we muster manhood and stand firm on our principles?
Stand strong, Lord.
I leave that up to you, brother. But as you dry your face and contemplate your next move, keep in mind the devils love doubt. And if you don't know how to be a man, they will show you how.
It's wartime.
Cypher! Peace.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're joined in conversation this evening with author, psychologist Dr. Jerome Fox. The book, Addicted to White, The Oppressed in League with the Oppressor. And let's go back to the phones, take another call. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
Elliot?
Yes, sir.
Dr. Fox, I've been listening to you. I didn't want to chat. I wanted to ask you some questions about your book, but I want to touch on about two different things, especially the last two callers that called in and wanted to kind of educate you. I want to tell you this. People don't want to deal with facts. When you say where they're going to run to, I'm just going to hit some quick facts, and I put them in the chat room here. What you said earlier on, and a lot of people aren't good listeners. I talk a lot, but I listen well. When you touched on the fact that there's nowhere to run, I'm going to hit this right quick. 86 million people are in extreme poverty in Nigeria. That's in a country where the richest African is Dangote, who is a 60-year-old Nigerian cement tycoon and philanthropist.
Yes, I mentioned him in the book, by the way.
Pardon me?
I mentioned him in my book.
I don't doubt it because I listen well, and I'm going to try to tie it in for you. Mm-hmm. Most people don't listen well, but those sentences right there should address and answer the same two people that try to tell you about running to a black country. You told them earlier in a concise sentence that white supremacy has already attacked that continent. I'm going to say again, under the first black president to head this country, 53 of 54 African countries have AFRICOM military members from the U.S. military in those countries. The only one that didn't was Zimbabwe. So when people keep trying to talk about where to run to, you already told them there is nowhere to run. And it's not about power. It is about a systemic strategy where these people are playing chess while we are considering to continue to play checkers or pickup sticks. So I'm anxious to get your book because at 64 years old, I first understood this sitting underground at a missile silo in Tucson, Arizona in the desert. I'm 64 years old now. I sit underground at 70. I saw this coming, and I'm happy to be alive and see some people young like you that have caught on to it. I want to say one more thing. When you have a country like Nigeria with 86 million people in poverty, and there's only about 44 million people here, and a black American keeps telling you to run to Africa, they don't know what they speak of. I don't care if they're insulted, but theory does no good when it's not supported by facts. So I applaud your work. I'm looking forward to getting your book. And the other thing I wanted to put in that I think Mr. Booker was trying to tell you about, there is a reason why you can't use Robert's Rules of Procedure, and I'm going to try to only spend two more minutes and explain why. When we were in high school, we were only a small percentage of the population as blacks. When they wanted us to run for president and vice president, no. Once you learn the power structure, you know the three positions we took, the chaplain, the secretary, and the parliamentarian, because Robert's Rules of Procedure is a form of how to subvert democracy. You can let the president and all the rest do anything they want. And if you want to hold them and forward anything they're doing against you, all you have to do is know the procedures. They don't usually know them. Same thing happens in our government today. You can use Robert's Rules of Procedure to forward just about anything. Make them table it, delay it, take it off the board. We have to redo it. And that's, I think, the point that Brother Elliot was bringing up. You can't use the white man's system if you're trying to free yourself.
Right. And my answer to that is that, or to Elliot, is that when you're focused on the goal, you're better prepared to see what works and what doesn't work.
Okay. Brother Otis, thank you for your call.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate your work, gentlemen.
And you know, before Dr. Fox leaves, he'll tell the listening audience again how to get the book.
Yeah, I'm going to have to leave.
Can you take one more, Dr.
Yeah,
Fox?
One more, because I have this cold. And
good.
I
yeah, because I hear you fighting through it the worse. Whole. Yeah. Okay, let me take one more. Let's go to 215. 215?
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing, man?
How are you, sir?
Fine. Hey, Brother Richard. Brother Fox. Hey, Dr. Fox, Brother Joe and stuff, man. Hope you feel better, Dr. Fox.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I just, you know, it's ironic. The Kuma said the credit works. You're not going to believe this, Dr. Fox. But Elliot told me this morning he was going to have a guest. And I saw your advertisement on the front of the Metro paper of your book, Addicted to White. Mm-hmm. And I was going to call it because I didn't know Elliot was going to have you on. When he said a guest, he didn't say what guest it was going to be. So I was going to suggest that he have you on as a future guest and hear you on tonight. But I tell you, the credit works so it's amazing how that works, man. But anyway, Dr. Fox, I will get another copy of your book, Addicted to White. And, hey, I'm going to tell you, man, when you say addicted to white, it comes in so many varying forms. Like, for example, I just – 2 hours ago, I just got back from seeing the movie, the highly acclaimed movie Black Panther, and even though it has a positive message in there in a lot of ways, even within Black Panther, Dr. Fox and Brother Ellen and Brother Richard, you could see addicted to white even in there.
Yes, I saw it too. Yes,
yeah, am I right, Dr. Fox?
Oh, absolutely.
Like for example,
with the ultimate goal, by the way,
yes,
being to placate us,
mm-hmm.
to serve ultimately the interests of white people and not ourselves.
Exactly, because one of the things that struck me, Dr. Fox,
to preserve them and not ourselves. But
exactly,
ahead.
You're mm-hmm. absolutely right, because one of the things that struck me was the white boy that was the CIA operative and stuff like that. Then at the end, he becomes like a hero to them. Here this guy was planning on destabilizing their country, doing all kinds of stuff, and because he allegedly takes a bullet for the sister or whatever like that, they come into some hero, and at the end, he's a good guy. I mean, you know, but it's always, but you know, Dr. Fox, it's always like that. They always got to have some good white boy character. When you go
yeah,
back
well, there's
the day,
nothing new about the structure of that movie. Even mm-hmm. the so-called villain,
mm-hmm.
The so-called villain spoke the most truth about
yes,
our situation.
He's
portrayed as some crazed, you know, maniac. When in
mm-hmm.
truth, he's the one that we should be viewing as the hero. So, I mean,
exactly.
The whole structure, there's nothing new about it, you know.
Exactly. Like, you go back, Dr. Vine, even the movie about Steve Biko years ago, and Steve Biko was supposed to be a hero in South Africa, but who winds up the hero? The white boy. He gets
mm-hmm.
killed early in the movie, the white boy winds up the hero. It just never stops. It never stops. And you know, Dr. Fox, I look back, I'm 56 years old now, and I look back at my days, and I'd be like, the fact is, I don't deny it, I was addicted to white. Like, we all have been stained and mentally messed up through white supremacy, if you want to call it, for lack of a better term, and white racism, white extremism and stuff like that. Because I know back when I was coming up in North Philadelphia, I used to watch the old movies, Tarzan. And here I'm a black man. I used to watch those movies, and I shudder in shame when I think back on them and stuff. Because I used to root for. I used to say when Johnny Weissmuller played Tarzan, I say Tarzan killed them little black. They would show our people with the you know the bones.
And by the way, that movie Tarzan and Siri was being shown in Africa at the same time. By the way,
I didn't realize that, Dr. Phil.
Yes.
Okay, so you learn something every day.
So it was just as popular in Africa as it was here.
Wow. And see, I can say I'll be the first to admit, I don't claim to know everything. That's something that, see, I'm glad you educated me on that because I wasn't aware of that. And that's what you were saying to a couple of the callers a few minutes ago, the straightening the hair, the lightening the skin.
Yes.
Like, so that's right in Africa now, you know?
Yes.
And that's why I applaud what Brother Elliot was saying, Dr. Fox. I mean, you got to take a stand. So where the hell are you going to run to if you don't take a stand? And like you said, first start with the mind. Like you said, the white man, like you tried to tell one of the callers, Dr. Fox, the white man might have – he might be and have authority and stuff, but he don't have no power. Because
that's
like you
right.
Say,
you got the power.
You got the power because, like, look how useless this white man is. And I don't get into religious. I'm a Muslim, but that's my personal thing. But look, like the Minister Farrakhan said, look how the weather makes the white man's weapons useless. When you get them snowstorms and hurricanes, ain't a damn thing his nuclear bombs and his bullets can do when a big snowstorm or rainstorm comes. It's useless. You know what I mean?
The ultimate power is no fear of death.
Exactly.
When you have no fear of death, nobody can do anything to you, quite frankly. Nobody has power over you. We have to overcome our fear of death.
Yes. What prime example, Dr. Fox, is when you see some of the power, and I don't advocate nobody, you know, killing, but when you see what goes on in Israel a lot of times, some brothers are strapped themselves with bombs. They know they're going to be killed.
Absolutely.
But if they have to take out 10 Israelis and stuff, they do it. Because they figure, hey, I can only die one time. And like
that's
you say,
right.
Brother Fox, when you get over that fear of death, that's it. Because, you know, it always puzzled me, Dr. Fox, but I heard black folks especially, they say because we've been so brainwashed by addicted to white, that we are so quick to want to kill one another over the stupidest things, right? It could be over a parking space or a brother looked at me wrong. But yet that same brother, he gets a fear of death when you say, well, you stand up and fight against this white man and his oppressor. Well, these people will kill you, man. They'll kill you and stuff. But yet that same brother won't think twice about shooting another brother over a parking space. You know, I've seen a brother pull a gun on the brother over, he's ready to kill him over a parking space. I'm like, really?
That's just how twisted white addiction will cause our minds to be. So that's just another instance of addiction to white.
Exactly, I agree, and that's why we have to continue to fight against it. Because like you talked about earlier, when you first about an hour or so ago, about how these white boys with these allegations and stuff, I've been on my jobs. I worked on the private and public sector, Dr. Fox. I have seen white privilege firsthand. White boys that sit up there and they'll sit up there and disrespect women because they've always had this thing of this full of entitlement. They can be married and feel they can come on a job and have their way with any woman they want, black, white, Puerto Rican. I've seen it.
It's value number one, by the way. Number one, and that they're always good, right? Almost divine, and we're bad, inferior, and should be servants to them. That's value number one.
Exactly, and that's why it's important, like you said, that we in order to get cured of a problem, Dr. Fox, you got to first admit it, and then we all as black people have to first admit that we all haven't been addicted to white. We all have. Any black man or woman that says they haven't, they lying to themselves. We've been instilled with white values and stuff. And if we go, it's like you can have the best treatment centers in the world, but if a person don't first admit they have an alcohol problem or drug problem, they never can get cured.
Right.
It's that simple, Dr. Fox.
What we have to understand in a very compassionate way is that denial is the soil in which addiction blossoms.
Yes.
So we have to help people, and we do have techniques for that, to overcome their denial. But it begins with us gathering together as fellow addicts to talk it out. Through talking, we become, in certain ways that I prescribe in this book and about certain topics, we become gradually detoxified from these white values. But, denial is not, it seems almost so formidable. But in truth, there are ways to overcome our denial about being addicted to white. But the first thing we have to take is to come together and talk about it.
I agree.
In a very compassionate way, not putting each other down or anything like that.
None of us is perfect. We all have our faults, and like I said, we all have been messed up by this so-called white supremacy system doctrine that we live by. And I close with these last things, because I know you want to get off so you can get some rest. I was talking to the sister from One United Bank. That's the largest African American bank in the country, as you know. And I was talking to one of the executives the other day, and she said, "Mr. Dennis," she said, "just like this." She said, "I'm encouraged," and she was very profound. What she said, "I'm encouraged by the number of black people across the country that's starting to bank black now." She says, "Because I was like anybody, I was frustrated, you know, when I would talk to my people, and they say I ain't bank with no black bank." But she said, "You never heard nobody that's Asian say that, or somebody in this. They would have no problem supporting their own financial institution." She said, "But then I had to realize that how white supremacists affected our people." And she said, "You have to be patient with them. You have to be patient with them." And she said, "Over a period of time, some of those same people starting to come around." And our bottom line, Dr. Fox, he said, "If we ever become another Black Wall Street like we did back in the day," she said, "this time we got enough conscious brothers and sisters," because she said, "just what you said, Dr. Fox, is starting to mind first." He said, "We got enough conscious brothers and sisters today, in spite of all the things that's going on, that we will not let our Black Wall Street be destroyed as it was back in the day." She said, "Because our people are too conscious now and stuff." So, and again, and when I heard that coming from her, they just gave me six words of encouragement and stuff, you know. So I agree, Dr. Vice, it starts in the mind first and stuff. You know, once we get our minds right and stuff, our behinds will follow.
Thank you for your call.
Thanks, Dr. Fox, for your time, brother. Go ahead and get some rest. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, I'll listen to you as y'all wind down the show. And keep up the good work, my brothers.
All right, Jim. Thank you for your call.
You're welcome, man.
If I may say, Elliot, before we, kind of what the next step we go in, because one thing then that I think in going through this that is important for us to realize, it seems like it's two sides that we have to be clear. Dr. Fox tell us to, you know, get the book, read the book, and go through the process. The process is a self-exploration process. And what I would like to emphasize as I'm trying to do this, go through it myself, is that a lot of stuff about ourselves, when we're talking about these white addictions, we may not like. And we may not like to be able to expose those things. We barely like to expose them to ourselves when we're alone, let alone with a group of six or seven or eight people. So the power of the process takes the power of ourselves to want to put ourselves through that. Because when we start to do the self-exploration, if, as they said, that these values, as ugly as they are the cause for our own personal and group demise, and that we as individuals are harboring them, being in a group and exposing how they manifest themselves, I don't think would be a comfortable experience.
Right.
So I think it's important, for us to realize that.
Right. But just remember, though, that this alliance that I speak about between ourselves and our oppressor is a shame-based alliance. So the only way to fight shame, and I say this in several places in the book, is through humility, realizing that I'm not perfect. And, you know, shame on you if you want to think of me as such or want to criticize me for not being perfect. Humility is the antidote to shame. And once you take that first step and say to the world, I am about freeing myself of this shame that has been strategically used to bind me, then you can post your worst deed on the biggest billboard, on the busiest highway, and list really all of your misdeeds or whatever, the things that you are ashamed of, and not care, in a sense. Not care in the sense that if you hurt people, you don't care about that. But what you don't care about any longer is hiding that fact. Yes, it's me. I'm not proud of what I did, but, you know, as the song says, I once was lost, but now I'm free. Mm.
Dr. Fox, I want to thank you for being with us and fighting through that cold. Give the listening audience the ways that they can pick up the book, Addicted to White.
Yeah, you can go to Amazon.com or any bookstore and ask them to order it. But I guess the easy way is you go to Amazon.com, type in the title, Addicted to White, The Oppressed in League with the Oppressor, and you'll see it sells for $19.55. And also remember, if you can, I am running a class at PASSEP at 1509 Cecil B. Moore Avenue every Thursday evening from 5:30 to 7. And there's still time for you to enroll. And I'll take you through this entire book and show you how to use it.
Dr. Fox, I want to thank you for being with us. Looking forward to having you back at a later date.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
We'll talk soon.
All right, then. Bye now.
Brother Richard?
Yes, sir.
Interesting 2.5-3 hours with Dr. Fox.
Yes, it was a long time coming, and I think we really touched on something. I hope that, you know, we assess and agree that we might need to continue to have this discussion, you know, again and again, just to kind of flush out and utilize the process and the audience, you know, to help us go through the process.
Yeah, because when you look at, I mean, because we've discussed these things in other fashions before, but when you look at some of our historical people that have contributed to our experience here, and you know, he mentioned W.E.B. Du Bois, you can look and see his white addiction even in his love for black people.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of tainted, especially some of the things that he did early in his life. But, I mean, he didn't, I think he kind of realized, and that's the thing about it that was a little strange. I think he kind of realized it, but then again, he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would talk about that double consciousness and kind of lay out what it meant to him. But I don't think he realized that he might have been looking at himself in the mirror, and maybe he did. I don't know. But, you know, you could see what he did later in his life, and maybe he did realize it.
But a lot of us go through that transformation, you know, process, whether it be the maturity from, you know, adolescence to and with that teens and then to adulthood, you know, in the physical, but also in the mental, emotional, or, you know, just transforming based off an amount of information or self-reflection. But I think that key point about the humility, you know, that allows us to be able to look at those things and really assess is critical when you take that inward journey and then have to be able to express that or interact with others. And that's what we have to create again, the social relationships, the, you know, that with each other so that we can do things.
Yeah. Listen, you're right, because that stops, you know, when somebody, you know, because there's always going to be differences. We're not clones. We're not the same individuals. It's going to be differences. But like you said, that humility, where a man can apologize to another man when he's wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes in our minds, in the back of our minds, even some of the most conscious individuals, I ain't apologizing to him. You know, what is he? You know, you look at, you see another black man there, but subconsciously, you really don't see anything worth apologizing for to another black man. You know what I mean? See, those type of things. We got to get beyond that foolishness, man.
And maybe, you know, given the possibility that the person don't even see it, that, you know, and that's why being in a structured type of format and where you're kind of, you have to expose and dialogue with each other, address those subjective things with each other. At least a person and say, oh, I didn't even know I was harboring this to you.
Mm-hmm.
That prevented me from saying, you know, that I wasn't apologizing for it because it didn't seem like that as something that I didn't see it as something that I should do because I didn't even see it, you know. But not until we place ourselves in a situation where we can bring these things up that we can see that, oh, and be, as you say, that humility to be able to say, oh, now I see that it wasn't intentional towards me. It was just something that we both misunderstood about each other, which strengthens our bonds with each other.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Listen, before we leave, I want to reiterate or restate that tomorrow is another full schedule on Time for an Awakening. Monday morning will start out with African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on Monday afternoon or late evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed will be on from 6 to 8. Brother Jihad, working through a little technical difficulties there. He got a lot of equipment there that he's using. Yeah, and he's broadcasting similar to the way Sister Taki and Brother Saber is broadcasting. They're doing live video and audio. So it's a little bit, their experience is a little bit different. Even if it's an experience for me, because I was down there trying to work with him last week to get him right. And hopefully tomorrow he'll be right, but he'll be right. It's no problem. You know, sometimes when you get started, it's a little bumpy road, but just like Brother Oshie, I mean, he's flying, he's cooking with gas now. But in the beginning, it was a little bumpy for him.
And I have to say, Elliot, you know, with Brother Oshie program, I'll be sitting there sometimes and then, you know, they have me compelled to just, I want to be a caller, you know? But I really enjoy their his program. It's the information, the way he presents it. It touches my consciousness.
Yeah, well, he'll be on tomorrow, 11 to 1. Then Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad, 6 to 8. And then 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365 Connect is on. And you can see and hear that program by going to timeforawakening.com, which is the website, and hear the live audio and see the broadcast. And if you missed it, any of the other four episodes, or five episodes, to be honest, you can go to timeforawakening.com and look at the podcast of Let's Buy Black 365 Connect and see all the episodes that they've had so far. A new one coming on tomorrow at 8 o'clock tomorrow evening. Wednesday, Sister POC is back with Revive. Wednesday evening, 8 to 10. Thursday, Us Lifting Us, Black Economic Movement. Their program is on Thursday evening, 9 to 10. And then Friday, we're back with Time for Awakening, Friday evening at 8 p.m. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. To play such a small part of the thing that they'll soon be right at the heart of.
said he wants to be a fireman. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. If we know all we say we know about the problem.
Children, to save the children.